Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
One half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game, every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch. We claw with our fingernails for that inch. Because we know when we add up all those inches, that's gonna make the fucking difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying. I'll tell you this, in any fight, it's the guy who's willing to die who's gonna win that itch. And I know if I'm gonna have any life anymore, it's because I'm still willing to fight and die for that itch. Because that's what living is. The 6 inches in front of your face. Now I can't make you do it. You gotta look at the guy next to you. Look into his eyes. Now I think you're gonna see a guy who will go that inch with you.
Hell yeah.
You're gonna see a guy who will sacrifice himself for this team because he knows when it comes down to it, you're gonna do the same for him.
Hell yeah.
That's a team, gentlemen.
Hell yeah.
And either we heal now as a team, or we will die as individuals. That's football, guys.
Welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens, where all the sports talk is royal, real, and straight from the boroughs. Today is Wednesday, November 3rd. This is episode 207. I'm sorry, December 3rd. Episode 207. I'm Gino, here with Kevin and Darren. Please catch Scrivy at your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Got something to say? Leave us a comment. We'll get back to you. We got NFL. We got college football playoff picture in view now, and we got a little hot stove at the end. We're gonna get it going. We'll start off with the Jets beat the Falcons 27-24. Nick Folk drilled a 56-yard field goal as time expired to give the Jets a dramatic, gritty home win. Kevin,
I can say, yay, I'm happy we won. I really am. I don't, you know what, we mentioned a couple weeks ago, there's no surefire number one top notch quarterback coming out. And with the way the Jets have done early draft picks, I don't trust the Jets in their history, because of their history, making early draft selections. And you know what? I went through a couple weeks ago. You know, Mahomes was 12. Josh Allen, the 7. Lamar Jackson, late first. Dak was the 4th. Purdy's a freaking Mr. Irrelevant, you know, it's on and on and on. You can find a quarterback if you're talented enough. If you got the right scouting, you can find a quarterback somewhere.
I disagree, but we could continue for today.
I want to see this team win. I want to see them have results. I mean, they've been playing hard for Aaron Glenn. They've been in most of these games. I mean, the way the Jets played the Patriots a couple weeks ago, Patriots were a better team. there's never a doubt that the Patriots were winning, but I thought the Jets played them a lot tougher than the Giants did on Monday night.
We'll get to them in a minute.
The game itself, you know, I'd still like to see Breece have a little bit more role in the offense, only 19 carries. This was the game that was A.D. Mitchell's turn, 8 catches, 102 yards. He had that beautiful catch, the 52-yard that Taylor underthrew him. You know, another ball, you know, Fields a couple weeks ago underthrew him that he was credited with a drop. Mitchell can get open. It's nice to see a guy get open. It was nice to see, you know, Taylor actually deliver the ball deep. Unfortunately, Metchie had a tough game. He had 2 or 3 drops. You know, it was his turn. You know, after Mitchell had it seemed like the roles were reversed a couple weeks ago. But I'm glad to see these young receivers that we got in as throw-ins, you know, look like they can contribute, that they can be a part of this team. The end of the game, you know, they get the touchdown run from Taylor from 10 yards out with under 2 minutes left. And then just a fiasco. Falcons punt, Jets punt, Falcons punt. You know, you don't see 3 punts in the last 2 minutes of the game and then still see the team able to march, get close enough. And yeah, it's from 56, but Falk drilled it from 56. Somehow it got through the uprights. They got the win. I mean, the special teams, another great performance. I mean, Falk has missed 1 kick all year. Guy's been terrific. He missed a 55-yarder on Sunday in those crappy conditions, which I'll give him a pass about. He's been terrific. McNamara, 5th in the league in net average. He's dropped in only 4 out of 51 punts are in the end zone, you know, touchbacks. He's 4th in the league inside the 20. He's been terrific. They've been doing well in special teams. They're one of the highest rated special teams. You know, yes, I'm stretching for good things. I've got my Jets.
Listen, they try not to even kick the Wangu. They
try not to turn over. You finally got to win.
No, I'm just saying, they try not to kick the Nwangu. They go out of their way because they know he's dangerous every time he touches the ball. Not that Williams isn't, but they try to avoid him.
And then just on the Falcons side, you know what? Yes, he's as a guy, I don't have the dish or, you know, the pass to all the games. You see the highlights, you see the stats, but boy, when you actually sit down and watch Bijan Robinson play, my God, he is good.
He's the only guy close to Jahmyr Gibbs in this league. They're 1-1A. I mean, it's just the Falcons don't know how to utilize this guy.
Yeah.
Too much Algier. I don't get it, but and listen, nothing against Algier, but you know, they should both be in the game at the same time if you're gonna do that, just because Bijan is such a threat in the passing and running game. It's ridiculous.
He's so good. That Darren, I mean, you know, we could
listen, I'm the same boat as you. I root for this team to win. I get 17 of these games a year. I want them to win as many as possible. And they have to learn how to win a little bit. And you know, listen, you have some pieces to build around now on the offense. You like both tackles, even though Membu may not have been his best the other day. Fashanu has been really good the last, about 5 games now. He's been really good. Breece is Breece, and you better re-sign him because you didn't trade him. So they'll find a way to keep the guy. You know, and then they didn't even give Davis really a carry. They just gave the ball to Breece. They just didn't run it enough. You think Mason Taylor is a keeper. You know, you feel like, you know, Tippmann has found his way at guard. You know, he seems like he's fine. You know, the 2 receivers, like you mentioned, Adonai Mitchell is going to be a good number 2 for us, and Metchie can be a good slot guy. Did not have a great game last week by that. And on the defense, do I need a couple guys in the secondary? Would I love to get the 5th or 6th pick and get Downs as my safety and put him out there for 8 years? I would. Geno laughs. I swear when I see this team – no, I'm not – I know I'm not a Downs in particular about wanting to pick 6th or 7th rather than 3rd. I know where you agree, where we disagree on that. But I'm okay with it. I'm okay with just getting good players that we can build around and getting the right quarterback in here and even signing somebody if we can't draft the right guy. But, you know, you see the pieces to build around. Listen, are they going to win more than 5 games? Probably not. I mean, they have a schedule that is conducive to win maybe even many as 6. But you can't count them to win them all. New Orleans is a winnable game. You know, this week's a winnable game at home against Miami. I mean, so there are opportunities. You just don't know what you're going to get from this team. But we'll see. We'll see what we come out of here with.
Gina, what do we have them at preseason?
9, right? 8 or 9.
You had them at 9 and 8.
Okay.
And I had them at 6 and 11.
So you're the one that's going to be right.
Although
closest, I should say. Closest, not right.
although there are people who have played with the NFL playoff machine, if the Jets win out, there are still possibilities for the Jets to make the playoffs.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. But I'll take the win over Atlanta, and we digress and move on. Hopefully we can continue to just be competitive every week.
And we have, except for Buffalo and Dallas, we've been competitive most of these games.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Move across town. We go to the Giants. They lose to the Pats on Monday night. They were dominated by the Pats on Monday night. After the first half, this game was over. Giants fall to 2-11. New England, a league leading 11-2. Darren?
I'm going to start. The Giants defense doesn't seem to exist. They gave up 400 yards again this week. The names are not playing to the back of their football cards all season, pretty much. Dard does add some excitement to this team. The receiving weapons aren't there. Scatterboos hurt. I mean, there's a lot of things that go on. Andrew Thomas is probably the best tackle in football right now, but you can't even talk about it because there's nothing else happening. But I have a question for you guys, and this is just something that kind of tweaked me a little bit watching the game on Monday night. There was a play with Dart's running up the sideline, and he got depleted. His foot was in bounds, and Aikman and Barkwell, it was all within the rules. So here's my point on this. There's a penalty called unnecessary roughness, okay? Now, if I'm a defensive lineman, I'm charging the quarterback, and I jump up to try to block it, and my hand happens to touch his helmet, there's a 15-yard penalty for me. But you're telling me Ellis couldn't have shoved him with two hands to knock him down? He had to de-cleat the guy? At a certain point, we have to determine what unnecessary roughness means to me, because I think that 15-yard penalty for trying to block a pass that happens to – And let's be honest, if Mahomes is that quarterback, he gets the call. If Allen's that quarterback, he gets the call. If Lamar is that quarterback, he gets the call. Probably Purdy, maybe Mayfield, Stafford. A few guys get that call. Dart's not getting that call, right? But we know Mahomes and Allen definitively are, right? The other four most likely. But I don't understand how you can have unnecessary roughness when that is about as unnecessary a roughness hit as you can see in the league. He's a foot out, and he's almost kind of – I know he's skied, but he could have just shoved him.
Yeah,
I don't know how you get to de-cleat the quarterback, but if I happen to go jump to try to block a pass and happen to skin the top of your helmet, you're going to give me 15 yards. I know listen, you guys are both going to tell me it's the rule, and it is. I just don't understand the rule. Maybe I just don't get it. I just don't agree with it. I don't know. Boys, thoughts? Or am I just crazy on this?
In real time, I was waiting for the flag.
Absolutely not.
In real time, I was waiting for the flag.
I wasn't waiting for any flag because too many times. Listen, here's the problem with it, and that is too many times what we've seen is the quarterback trying to get another 3 yards after the defender did not try to knock him out of bounds. So we knocked him out of bounds. Did he knock him out hard? Abso-friggin-lutely. But that is the play because you can't have it both ways. You can't tell me that he's a runner and that I can't take him out hard. When every time he makes another little step down the sideline, he's going to try to get another 3 yards. So either he needs to go out of bounds and avoid the hit, or
you're right, Gino. You're right.
I mean, but you can't have it both ways. And listen, you made the comment. I've seen that not called on Lamar. I've seen it not called on Mahomes. I've seen it not called on.
Listen, you can laugh as much as you want about Mahomes. Allen is 10 times worse than Mahomes.
I disagree because he's trying to tiptoe down the sidelines to get the extra 3 yards for the first down. And if you're going to do that and the defender throws you out of bounds, you've got to be able to take it. That's it.
But
my issue with Dart, I've seen Mahomes. When he's getting close there, he slows down like he's going to go out of bounds. And then he doesn't. But the defender sees him slow down and says, well, I can't touch him because he's giving himself up. Dart did not give himself up. So in that instance, Dart's got to be smart, especially coming back from the concussion. Dart has to be a lot smarter than that and get the hell out of bounds.
He's got to be a lot smarter than that.
Huh?
He's got to be a lot smarter than that, Kev. I agree with you.
My question is that hit was unnecessary. He could have taken him with two hands the same way and shoved him.
Oh, yeah.
If you can have a rule called unnecessary roughness, I'm going to say that's necessary. That's crap. Because you'll watch him in the pocket, And all of a sudden, if a guy happens to get shoved down low and tackles him below the knee, it's a penalty. Yeah. If it's up top, I'm trying to block a pass and I scrape his helmet. We saw it in a Jet playoff game where the Chargers got another play where he barely touched him. That's a penalty. I just don't understand. We protect the quarterback, but just because he's within this 10-yard radius, he's completely protected because he's a runner.
So how would you have liked the guy to shove him out of bounds?
Two hands, not gently? Shoulder, not
gently.
No, shove him.
Darren, the quarterback's Darden's running
low with his shoulder and lifted him off the ground. Gino,
I am not making an excuse for the hit, but my problem is Dart was running full steam.
Understood.
This shove is not getting him out of bounds, Darren.
I think it is.
Okay.
I just think that the way they treat the quarterbacks is a little inconsistent because I don't like this stuff they get away with in the pocket. And then this league can't afford the Monday night game where Dart's getting knocked out.
Listen, last year there was a hit on Jaden Daniels that was very similar to that. And I was like pissed. And
I agree with you. You brought it up. I remember it. I agreed with you.
Listen, but at the end of the day, if he's going to try to stay in bounds and get those extra 4 yards, he needs to at least protect himself a little bit because otherwise the guys are going to throw him out of bounds as hard as they can.
No, I get it. My only thing is, I guess I just don't understand the inconsistency in the NFL. And we'll move on after this because this is another debate. But it's just like we're going to protect them all here like it's the biggest deal in the world. And then when he's running down the sideline, and I've seen Mahomes do it, and I've seen Allen do it, and I've seen Jackson do it. I just don't feel like you should really be able to hit the quarterback. And then Theo Johnson goes to protect his quarterback. They throw 15 yards on him.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Now it's time to use common sense. You just separate him. You separate it and say he defended his quarterback. He doesn't know if he's close to out of bounds, in or out at that point. Nobody knows until we watch the replay. You might have saw it live, G. You said you saw it live. You thought he was definitely in. I didn't know 100%. So, but you did. So you saw it, but I didn't. But how do you know Theo Johnson sees it? He goes to defend his quarterback, and they give the Giants 15 yards for the quarterback getting depleted. It's like common sense has to fall into this sometimes, Kev. That's my only point.
And I know you bring her up. The casual fan, my wife, was shocked that when she saw the flag, she was shocked it was on the Giant player.
I thought Johnson did the right thing defending his teammate. Either way, that was the only thing to talk about for the Giant game because there was nothing else. No. But that one play is basically the only thing that was mildly competitive the entire way, G. There's nothing else to bring up.
All right.
Except for Abdul Carter, who's watching porn while they're studying, and he gets suspended for the first quarter. What are we doing? What the hell are we doing?
Can you at least give me a retraction on this amazing Giants defensive line that you made?
I was the one that said it, too. So it's on me, too.
We both thought, I mean, the names, we thought Carter was just another addition to that with Thibodeau and Dexter and Burns.
A struggling rookie watching porn.
All right. We're going to start AFC. I'll run through the picture. So New England at the moment, the one seed, 11-2. The Broncos, the two seed at 10-2. They beat Washington 27-26 in overtime. My Commanders took a shot to win it in overtime. Did not succeed.
You had to.
It was a great job. Yeah,
completely agree. That's the only way I wanted at that point. Okay.
To be honest, Mariota played well. He did. Mariota did what he could.
Yeah. Okay. The three seed is Jacksonville at the moment at 8-4. They beat the Titans 25-3. That's a blowout. The four seed at the moment is the Ravens. They're at 6-6. They lost to the Bengals on Thanksgiving night 32-14 in Joe Burrow's return. Darren?
You see the difference that Burrow brings. And his little speech before the game with the interview saying, I get paid a lot of money to play a kid's game. I want to be out here with the boys. Yep. I know they're not rushing me back. If you're a Bengals fan and you didn't want to run through a wall the minute Joe Burrow said that, then you're not a football fan because that was about as cool as anything I've ever listened to pregame. That was just a nonchalant statement, Kev.
At 3-8, he could very easily have said, nope, I'm not coming back this year.
Yep. Ravens.
I love what he did, and they dominated that. They were the better team.
Ravens had 5 turnovers in that game, by the way. All right.
Something's not right with Lamar. You can just see it.
Absolutely.
He's just not the same player. And Henry only getting, 10 carries in this game? I don't even understand what they're doing over there.
Killing me in fantasy, by the way. All right, the five seed is the LA Chargers right now. They're at 8-4. They beat the Raiders 31-14. Darren?
Now they lose Herbert. I mean, he may not miss a game, but he's got a broken left hand. Means he can't take any snaps on the center, which means that he's going to have to catch snaps kind of one-handed. It's going to be a weird thing. This move gives the Chiefs life. Because the Chargers have a brutal schedule and a quarterback with one hand. Otherwise, I think the Chiefs would be dead.
And a decimated offensive line.
It's brutal. They have nobody there.
No.
All right. Six seed is the Colts. They're at 8-4. So they lost to the Texans. We mentioned it. Colts get at Jacksonville this week. Big game.
And Daniel Jones with a slight break in his the fibula is a one in the back. Mm-hmm.
Seventh seed is the Bills. They're at 8-4. They beat the Steelers 26-7.
And by the way, on the Colts thing, just real quick, Sauce, there was a thought that it could be the Achilles. It wasn't.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for them. But as a Jet fan, keep losing, Colts. I want two picks in the top 18, man.
Well, all of a sudden, that pick that was looking like about 30, all of a sudden it's creeping up to about 22 right now.
Exactly. Sorry, guys. And they still could win this division. If they beat Jacksonville this week, they're back in the driver's seat. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Steelers, by the way, they're at Baltimore this week. Both teams at 6-6. Winner actually will take over the AFC North.
We have seven big games this week out of 14. It's a really good week of the schedule, Kev.
Kev?
When you watch that game and you hear the booing and the fire Mike Tomlin's chants and all, I mean, the guy has never had a losing season. I know he hasn't won the playoff game now in about 5-plus years. But, you know, now the interesting thing was, I think it was Roethlisberger and Hayward on two different podcasts were talking about Harrison, talking about maybe it's time for him to leave. You know, the mutual parting of ways. Roethlisberger, maybe he'd be a perfect guy for Penn State.
Yeah, I heard that. I thought it was an interesting thought, too, by the way.
Yeah.
Because Tomlin seems to get guys to want to play there and stay there for a little less money, and he's a great recruiter.
Yep.
All right.
Of NFL players, anyway.
On the outside looking in, Texans at 7-5. We mentioned they beat Indianapolis this week. Pittsburgh 6-6. They lost the Bills, and then at the moment, still in the hunt, are the Chiefs. At the moment, they would be like the 10th seed at the moment out of
6-7. Also.
Yep, they're 6-6. They lost to the Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving.
Most watched game ever, apparently. Not a Super Bowl, but most watched game ever. Wow. That Thanksgiving game. It was a good game. Dallas was just a little bit better. You watch Dak. That might have been one of the best games I've seen Dak play completely from top to bottom. He was excellent. I thought he was great.
Chiefs at 6-6 have a tough road ahead of them because they're going to lose every tiebreaker with any of these playoff teams in conference.
Well, here's the thing: they have to beat the. If they beat Texans this week, they have the tiebreaker with them. If they do beat the Chargers, then they split. So now you have to see how the tiebreaker works out. Right. And they do own the tiebreaker against the Colts. So if Jacksonville beats – there are ways where it becomes Jacksonville wins the division. They're not worried about the Jacksonville tiebreaker anymore.
Right.
Buffalo's got them. Buffalo's the one that's got them.
All right. NFC. Bears are atop the NFC at 9-3. They beat the Eagles 24-15 on the Black Friday game. Dominant ground attack. They had 281 rushing yards. Eagles.
That was beautiful to see. Actually, call and get the fumble on that stupid freaking tush push. It was great to see. It was great to see that dominant over the Eagles. I hate the Eagles.
Well, the funny thing about it,
I'm loving the Eagles more and more every time you say you hate them.
They're not throwing the ball well, but they're still winning with defense in a running game. Ben Johnson was supposed to be the guy that was going to revitalize the passing attack. I'm not saying Caleb's been awful, but their offense in the passing game has been inconsistent at best. Yet the defense and the running game is carrying. Menungai has been an outstanding Rutgers rookie, another one of those seventh-round picks from Rutgers that has found a way.
And Kel's been a lot better than last year.
No doubt about that, but he just hasn't – he's still not consistent.
Exactly.
So with the win, the Bears right now are the one seed. The Eagles are the three seed. The two seed is the Rams. They're at 9-3. They lost to Carolina 31-28.
Wow.
Three Matthew Stafford turnovers. Bryce Young played well. Carolina is hanging around.
Listen, they just played sloppy. The Rams kind of took the Carolina Panthers for granted, in my opinion. Yeah. And then that one pick six started it. And then all of a sudden, you know, that fumble late, they were in field goal range to tie the game up. Stafford a little loose with the ball, which he's been throughout his career. It's not a new thing for Matthew Stafford. But you just see this team. Sometimes they get a little greedy with the pass. And it's been working the whole time. He hadn't thrown an interception since week two or whatever it was. And then all of a sudden, he got a little, a little happy throwing the ball around, got two picks, and you know, they don't use Kyron and they don't use Corum enough sometimes. But hard to criticize them when you keep winning. But this week they lost, and you get criticized a little bit.
All right. Four seed Tampa Bay, they're at 7-5.
They didn't look good either.
They didn't look good. No. They beat the Cardinals 20-17, though, so they're still there.
Quarterback's playing without a left shoulder, so I guess he looked good for considering that Mayfield probably can't lift his left arm. But nonetheless, they Bucky Irving coming back is a nice add, and then the receivers seem to be starting to practice. You know, a couple guys are practicing now for Tampa. They could be healthy by playoff time if they can hold off Carolina.
Five seed is Seattle at 9-3. They beat the Vikings 26-0. Darren, your preseason pick just continues to roll.
And on my fantasy league, they gave me 41 points on defense. How often are you going to get that?
Wow. Unbelievable.
I mean, a touchdown, 500. That kid brought, and I saw Max Brosmer play both at New Hampshire and at Minnesota. And, you know, he just didn't have a shot in this game. No. And, you know, he was bad. McCarthy had been bad. He got hurt with a concussion protocol. And then Brosmer played, and undrafted rookie starting in Seattle off a Seattle loss. You know, that was just, you know, that was a recipe for disaster. That was the easiest bet I had all weekend.
I'm going to skip the sixth seed for 2 seconds. I'll go to the seventh seed, San Francisco. They're at 9-4. They beat the Browns 26-8. And then we'll go back to the sixth seed. So the sixth seed is the Packers. They're at 8-3-1. Thanksgiving, they beat the Lions 31-24. Lions right now are on the outside looking in. They would be like the eighth seed if you were trying to do it by a seeding at the moment. They're at 7-5. Jordan Love had 4 touchdown passes. And then we get what would be the 9 seed on the outside looking in. The Cowboys at 6-5-1 after beating the Chiefs.
By the way, Cowboys-Lions on Thursday night is as fun a Thursday night game that you expect than you would have expected at the beginning of the season, because Dallas is playing so well right now, and Detroit just doesn't seem to have answers at this moment.
Yeah. I completely agree with that. The Packers late Sunday, they play the Bears and will be a great game.
Yeah, I mean that's the that 6-1 matchup could reverse real quickly. One game, all of a sudden, you know, you can see Green Bay as the 2, and you could see Chicago falling to the 6. So anything can happen here.
And then the other team hanging around in the NFC is the Panthers at 7-6 after they pulled off a great upset over the Rams.
We watched our struggle against the Jets, but this team's still hanging around.
And that is our playoff picture at the moment. We went through it pretty fast, but that is the playoff picture as of this moment.
One team I'm going to mention just in a weird way is Cincinnati, just because of how bad both Pittsburgh and Baltimore are playing. That Cincinnati's only 2 games out. I know it's 4-8, and I know they suck. It's a bad division right now, which you didn't expect. But Cincinnati, I mean, they have to play Buffalo this week, right, in Buffalo. So the odds of them winning that game and not falling to 4-9 are remote to an extent. But they've had Buffalo's number. Cincinnati has played well head-to-head against – Burrow has beaten Allen a lot. So and with Cincinnati's weapons on offense, if they get anything out of that defense and they find a way to win that game, suddenly – they'll still be 2 games out of first place, but they're going to have head-to-head matchups, including the following week where they play Baltimore again. So a lot of things happening there.
You know, I agree. They took away that Jet game.
Yeah.
Boy.
Well, and listen, they're playing without Joe Cool, and you saw the difference he makes. Just his presence just made them look so much more confident and competent as a team.
Okay. I got King's Ransom bets for this week. So
nice.
We're going to go with a 4-team parlay on Thursday night, plus 1,400 on the money line. It's 4 touchdowns. I think we're going to have a lot of points scored. Gibbs, Jameson Williams for the Lions, Pickens and Lamb for the Cowboys plus 1,400 to start. Second one, I've been doing this teaser. I'm going to give you a 6.5-point tease that's going to pay plus 130 with three teams. So 6.5-point tease. I'm teasing Seattle to minus 0.5 point, Buffalo to plus one, and Jacksonville plus 8. That's a three-team tease plus 130. And then the last one, it's a three-team bet. It's plus 451. Denver minus 6.5, the Rams minus 6.5, little change in the alternate line there, and Philadelphia minus 3. Those are the Kings ransom bets for week 14 of the NFL season.
By the way, that Monday night game becomes interesting too, because you get Philly and the Chargers, and the Chargers kind of need it at home. Not that they have much of a home field advantage, and Philly has not looked impressive.
That's, at all.
Not that Dallas is going to catch them most likely, but every time, if Dallas wins on Thursday, Philly will feel a little bit of heat.
Yep.
Just something to watch in the NFL.
I would agree with that, by the way.
That Thursday night game is so huge.
And I love the fact that the two Thanksgiving teams that play every year play in the following Thursday. It's all even for everybody. I know they don't play every year, but I like the way it worked out. I was just excited to see it.
Yep.
All right. NFL done for the moment. Let's move over to college football as it winds down. We are down to the last week here. Darren, start it.
All right, here we are. It's championship week this week. But what we're going to do is we're going to go conference by conference through last week. Kev's going to set us up with the playoff. We're going to go through each conference. Then Kev's going to set us up with the playoff. Then we're going to preview all the matchups and just mention where they are. At the end, we're going to make our picks in the five major games, and we're going to have a good time doing it. So let's start with the SEC because it has been the adopted conference of the best conference in the country, though they haven't won a championship in a couple of years. But we'll see what happens. So what I saw last week, Vandy, Texas kept their dream alive, correct? As remote as it may be, both teams kept their dream alive.
Their problem was that there's nothing in front of them that happened.
Exactly. So you look at Vandy, right? Their losses are Texas and Alabama. If you look at their wins, they've beaten nobody now. That Tennessee has fallen out of the top 25. Maybe Missouri, you want to call them a top 25 team. There's no great win for Vandy. I mean, at the time, there were good wins. But now they're not.
LSU was a good win at the time.
But it's not now. Now it's a 7-5 team.
Yeah.
So then you look at Texas, right? They've beaten Oklahoma, Vandy, and A&M. They made the mistake of actually scheduling Ohio State on the road. They lost to Georgia, which no one would make fun of you for, and the loss at Florida is the one that stands out. That's a 4-8 team they lost to.
That's the loss that's keeping them out. With those wins,
five teams that are in playoff contention. But you're right.
With those wins and with the loss at Ohio State week one, that's enough to put them in the top 10. And you know, it's that loss at Florida. You can't lose that game.
And they did to a 4-8 Florida Gator team, right? So then you look at teams like Oklahoma, Ole Miss. They survive, right? Ole Miss wins the Egg Bowl. They kind of pull away in that game. It was close to the half. Yep. Ole Miss was the better team. And the same thing with Oklahoma. They struggled, but they found a way to get past LSU, which is seemingly the way Oklahoma has played since the Mateer injury, Kev.
Yeah, the offense is rough to watch at times. It really struggles at times, but that defense is so good.
It is. So Ole Miss has beaten Oklahoma, lost to Georgia. Those would be the two best games that they have. Oklahoma's big wins were Alabama on the road, I believe, and at Michigan, at home for Michigan, I'm sorry. Michigan. But they lost to Ole Miss and they lost to Texas.
Yep.
Yet Oklahoma seems safely in with one really good win, which is Alabama.
Well, that head-to-head, and we're going to get to that head-to-head later. I know it. But that head-to-head against Alabama keeps them one spot ahead of Alabama.
It's crazy, right? But it's not consistent across the board as we get to, right? Then you look at a team like A&M who was undefeated in clearly 3G, right? And then they lose to Texas. So when you go through A&M, they beat Notre Dame and they lost to Texas. And there's really nothing else that's dominant. I mean, you know, they look like good wins at the time like the other teams, but they end up not being. So now they only have the one really quality win, and they have the one relatively quality loss.
Their win against LSU was the one that got Kelly fired. That was a good win at the time, but it wasn't. And Missouri's been right at the edge of 25, and, you know, like you said, at the end it's an 8-4 team, right?
That's where they sit, right? Yep. Then you go to then you go to Alabama, right? They make the final here, okay? So now when you look at Bama, they got, you know, they're going to play Georgia this week. Georgia survived. Alabama survived in a tougher game than expected, but you expect the Iron Bowl to be pretty competitive. But when Alabama jumped out, you didn't expect Auburn to storm back on them like they did.
Yep.
It's not Nick Saban's Alabama defense, all right? This is telling the board, let me outscore you, Alabama offense, and you see the difference a little bit in the makeup of the squad, Kevin. So now you look at it and you say, okay, Alabama beat Georgia, which they seem to always do, by the way, but losses to Florida State and Oklahoma. Oklahoma's a decent loss. Florida State is not, right?
Yeah.
You look at Georgia.
Oklahoma's right there. It's in week one, you didn't know that Florida State was going to have this rough a season.
No, it looked like they were going to be great, and then they ended up not being great. Georgia, on the other hand, beat Old Texas and Ole Miss. These are the best wins. They were down to Ole Miss. They stormed back, blew out Texas. Game was 14-10, beating 35-10, but they did lose to Alabama. A second loss to Alabama. I think they're still safe, though. Yeah. Right now, they're number three.
11-1, number three. And now it gets into the question of how much do you penalize a team who's clearly in? They're the three seed right now. Clearly in. How much do you penalize them for a loss to the number nine team? To me, it's a seeding line. It's not out of the playoffs.
I don't think it can go any lower than five, maybe six. I can't see it going any lower than that. And it's a team that you historically struggle. So now here's so my problem with the SEC right now is Oklahoma's automatic, because the eye test doesn't make Oklahoma that good to me. Now that I might be blind in this one, but I don't see Oklahoma as one of the 12 best teams in the country when I watched them play. One of the 10 best teams in the country when I watched them play. That's the one, and it's hard to take them out because that's where they're seated right now, but they got blown out by Texas on a neutral field.
Yep.
They didn't just get beat. They got beat pretty good. The win against Michigan looked better than it ended up being. And, you know, I guess, again, they escaped the Alabama game where Alabama had them 2-1 in yards and did everything right except turn the ball over. So that's really the one team that I would have to question here. If you were going to ask me who looks better, Texas or Oklahoma, I would put Texas in above them.
Yes.
And if you asked me who looked better, Vandy or Oklahoma, I would have a toss-up. I wouldn't know which way to go.
Did you see Pavia's tweet?
No, what did he say?
He said, you know, we need to go to Donald Trump and get an executive order to make it a 16-team playoff.
I saw another meme where they were like, they're going to have Trump take over. If they don't get it right, I think it was like a Miami fan. They're going to have Trump redo it. But nonetheless, the SEC, you know, they clearly probably is going to get five teams into this thing, probably six. If Alabama loses, are they out, Kev?
Yeah.
I think they are too, so that would make it five. If Alabama wins, I think they're going to get six.
I think they've got four right now.
Well, I'm sorry, I'm misadding.
Four, maybe five, right?
Okay, right. So, because right now we have Ole Miss, we have Texas A&M, we have Georgia, we have Oklahoma, right?
Right. Yep.
Alabama's the fifth. My mistake.
Yep.
And Texas would be the sixth.
And they're 13. They're not going to get up to 10.
So, Gino, as long as this conversation was, this is probably the longest one we're going to have. Because the Big Ten really kind of solidifies. Go ahead, Kev. Jay, you got some?
So, Georgia, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and Oklahoma are basically in.
Even I don't think Oklahoma should be, but yes.
Yes.
Okay.
So now we go to the Big Ten, the other premier conference in the country, okay? Ohio State, Indiana. By the way, if that's not a fumble through the end zone by Jermaine, I don't know what is. I mean, he lost control of the ball, stepped out of bounds in the end. That's a touchback.
That's it.
You review it and you miss it. The one thing we haven't talked about all year, but it's awesome, if you watch ACC football, is they actually let you listen to the replay official talking to the official on the field. So you get the entire audio of how they're agreeing on what this call should be. The SEC obviously doesn't do that because the SEC does everything a little – I mean, and the Big Ten, I mean, they obviously do it because they do everything a little bit messed up. But yeah, I love the way the ACC does it, by the way. Everybody should do that.
Yeah, I just don't like the ACC refs.
I'm not saying that they're good. But I don't think any of them are very good, by the way. But that was a fumble through the end zone. But they did what they had to do. They went into Michigan. Michigan settled for field goals early. Ohio State made them touchdowns after the first one. And that's the game. Indiana rolled in the old Oaken Bucking game. So that was that. Kev?
Yep. So one versus two.
Absolutely.
Winner, of course, is the overall number one.
Yep.
Loser still gets a first round bye, in my opinion.
Unless it's a blowout.
Yep.
If Indiana doesn't show up, because, again, you go through all these games, right, and the big wins. Ohio State beat Texas week one, 14-7. Yep. Indiana, their best win was at Oregon, right? It's a good win. There's nothing else for these teams. Nobody else hung around. Michigan, you want to call them a top 20 team? Fine. Ohio State won at Michigan. That's a rivalry game. It's a good win, but it's not a team fighting for a playoff. So if one of these teams blows out the other, that's where my concern would be.
You got teams that were, borderline 25 again, Washington, Illinois for Ohio State, Illinois and Iowa for Indiana, Penn State when they were still 3-0.
Nice win for Oregon at the time, too, but
Iowa, USC.
If one of those teams falls out of the top four, who has a shot to move up then?
I don't see it. I think
it's hard because no one's playing.
I know, and at the moment, Oregon would be the Oregon right now is ranked.
You want to have fun? Oregon's best win is USC.
Yep.
No, I'm just saying
Oregon. Oregon.
I'm not saying to move them up. I'm just saying I'm actually in agreement with Kev. I don't think either of these teams moves down.
The only way it happens is if somebody wins this game 48-7, and you say this team's a fraud.
Right, but then who moves up, Aaron?
You know what?
It could be
if Alabama beats Georgia and they beat them convincingly, maybe it's Alabama.
But if Ohio State beats Indiana, say, want to knock Indiana down, how can you move Indiana down below Oregon because they beat
them? You really can. And they won the game in Eugene.
Yeah.
But you could slide Ole Miss up if you think Ole Miss is for real. I mean, there are different things you can do.
And that goes now. Controversy, does the playoff committee consider the coaching change, which we'll get to after we talk about
the reality playoffs. Is that they're supposed to. So we're going to find that out. So the Big Ten, again, Oregon's best win is USC, and they're clearly in without a great win.
Yep.
The Penn State game at the time was huge. It was our game of the week. It was really exciting. Interception late, a lot of great things. But at the end of the day, Big Ten has three
very
teams
top
in, but it's very, very top heavy. Nobody else there. We go to the Big 12, and this is about as simple as it gets. Utah, despite winning last week, it wasn't impressive enough. They're not going anywhere, okay? They're not going to make it.
They're 15.
BYU has to win this week to be the second team. Otherwise, it's just Texas Tech as a one-bid league, Kev, right? I can't see anything else.
No, because, again, BYU's best wins at Utah.
Yep, which is a good win.
Then you got Arizona, Iowa State, and TCU, or the other three above 500.
Not great wins, right? Texas Tech, by the way, 49-0 at West Virginia. Biggest blowout, shutout loss since 1891 at West Virginia.
Yep.
You talk about 130 years, that's a long time.
For Texas Tech, they're 11-1, even if they lose to BYU. They're losing to the number 11 team. I think they're still in. Their only other loss this year was to Arizona State when
Morton didn't play. Morton didn't play. And they came back and took the lead late and almost found a way to win. They gave up that touchdown at the end.
Yep.
But this is the most cut and dry league because it's either one or two. If Texas Tech wins, they're in. If BYU wins, they'll both get in, I think.
Yep.
Okay, so you have Texas Tech in no matter what at this point.
They're a four right now. Right now they have a bye.
I understand. I'm just double checking.
And the eye test on Texas Tech is unbelievably impressive. You watch this team play. They're really freaking good offensively and defensively. It's a good team to watch. This is a team that could win the national championship that no one's going to talk about. ACC, Kev. Everything the ACC didn't want happened. Miami continues to blow out teams, beating most of them by a margin bigger than Notre Dame has done, right?
Yes.
They have the two bad losses. Okay, but we take them out of this right now because what happened, SMU goes to Cal. Cal fires Wilcox the week before, but they galvanize together. They lead most of the game. SMU scores on them late. Inside 2 minutes, they take the lead. Cal storms back, scores late, and wins that game by three, knocks SMU out. And Duke beats Wake in a game where Wake turned the ball over four times. And just an aside, as a Wake fan and all that stuff, Wake could have won this game. They had too many turnovers. death threats to Donovan Claiborne because he had a couple of fumbles is unacceptable.
Yep.
Or sports gamblers or people that were rooting for SMU or Miami or someone to get into the tournament, not do – you can't do this to college kids. Donovan Claiborne could have gotten a lot of money to play elsewhere, decided to see it through at Wake. There's, I hate that. You know, yep. College kids shouldn't be getting threatened with their lives because they had a fumble in a game. Beside the point. So now we get Duke gets into that spot with that win, and they play Virginia, who does what they have to do against Virginia Tech in the Commonwealth Cup. So yep. there we sit, Kev.
And Miami beat Pitt to knock Pitt out.
Pitt's done, and Miami now is sitting there still on the outside looking in, despite having a pretty impressive resume that includes beating Notre Dame.
They are the highest-ranked ACC team right now, but they are not playing the championship game.
Exactly. They don't get the auto bid.
Right.
So now if Duke wins this game, Kevin, mayhem ensues.
Oh,
yes. Explain how this happens.
The college football playoff, the five highest-ranked teams are automatically in, and then they choose the next seven best at large. Mm-hmm. Right now, you know for sure the SEC, the Big 12, and the Big 10, their champion is in, period. End of story. The American Conference, which you haven't talked about yet.
We're getting there next.
North Texas and Tulane are playing each other. Both are now ranked in the top 25. The winner of that is definitely in. Now comes that fifth conference. Virginia wins the game, they're in, period. We're done.
Yep.
If Duke wins, you're sitting there with a 8-5 Duke team whose best win probably at Clemson.
Yep. Which at the time seemed good, but it turned out not to be.
With losses to Illinois, at Tulane, Georgia Tech, Virginia, and at UConn. That is the single worst loss of anybody in contention. That opens the door. James Madison, who snuck into the top 25 this week. They are number 25. They will be playing for the Sun Belt title. They are 11-1. Again, they lost to Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
Their best win is probably Old Dominion.
Basically. And they're 23.5-point choice this week.
They're playing Troy. Their strength of records is actually pretty good, 18. But their strength of schedule is 118.
Yeah.
So they haven't played anybody. But is that better? Do you want to see what would then be a 12-1 James Madison team or an 8-5 Duke team that's lost to UConn?
UConn's better than you give them credit for. They had a nice season.
All right, so wait. So SEC, Big 10, Big 12, American Conference are four of the five that are going to get an auto bid.
Yes.
The fifth is either ACC or the Sun Belt.
With a remote chance of, Kev?
UNLV, you know, if Duke wins,
all right,
and James Madison loses, and UNLV beats Boise State to get them to 11-2.
At Boise on the blue field.
You know, that opens a possibility.
If you win at the road.
Now, then becomes, you know, really a close look to see where they go.
Okay, here's my question.
Yep.
So they have to take a fifth conference champion.
Yes. That's the top five conference champions. Okay. Normally, the Power Four are guaranteed. Duke is the one that can throw a monkey wrench in this. If Virginia wins, case closed.
They're in.
Virginia was 17.
Right, they're in.
They're in.
Okay.
Duke win would just set up chaos.
But it still is going to come down to then either Duke,
James Madison,
or UNLV, because they still have to have a fifth conference champion, is what I'm saying.
Yes.
Right? Here's the point.
That bid can't go to anybody else.
Nope.
That bid has to go to a fifth conference champion. A
conference champion, yep. So and you look at the other conferences, nobody else is worthwhile.
Just to explain this, Duke will get a ranked win. Will that be enough to have them leapfrog James Madison in the rankings?
Gotcha.
Because James Madison will not get a ranked win. UNLV will not get a ranked win. They'll beat a team on a road field.
Right.
But they are not guaranteed to get a ranked win. So it's going to be how much the committee thinks that a game in Charlotte, so it's going to be a little bit closer to Duke fans than it is to the Virginia fans. Not by much, but it's enough.
Yeah.
Where there'll be a bigger Duke crowd than Virginia crowd most likely. But if they think that that win is considered really, really good, will Duke be able to jump and leapfrog James Madison and jump and leapfrog UNLV if necessary or not? If Virginia wins, it's all moot. Unfortunately for all of us and for everybody else watching, it's the last game of the weekend.
Yes.
So it gives you a reason to watch what would normally be considered a crappy ACC final, which we all thought was going to be Clemson versus, Kev said Duke, and I said Georgia Tech in the beginning of the year, if I'm not mistaken. Georgia Tech didn't quite make it. Duke did. So neither one of us thought Virginia had any shot, and they're clearly the best team, but let's see what happens with it. But yep. That's where we sit, Kev.
Yep.
And then the American, just to finish this off, because one of these two teams is getting in, and this is a battle if you like your greens, G, because we have the mean green against the green wave, okay? Both coaches have been hired elsewhere, as has James Madison's, by the way, but they're all coaching in this game this week, okay? So we get – this game is going to be played in New Orleans, so it's going to be played in Tulane, basically. But the mean green are the favorite right now, 2.5 points last I saw. So it's a very crucial game on Friday night. So that's going to be your kickoff, so to speak, of all the big games. Friday night, you're going to find out who's going to be in from the American. And one of them, no mistake, is in. Now we just got to find out how the rest of this falls. And that's kind of where we sit with that. So, Kev, do you want to talk coaching first, or do you want to go through the games first?
I have one other point. Okay, so we basically went through, we established that we know what the top eight teams probably are, or at least guaranteed to get in. We know about the 11 and 12, which is basically going to be the fourth and fifth conference that's going to get in.
Yep.
The other two teams at the moment are Alabama and Notre Dame.
Yes.
If BYU wins, based on what we have at this moment, one of those two teams is probably not getting in.
If Alabama wins, it's Notre Dame.
So yes. Alabama and BYU in, Notre Dame probably doesn't get in.
Based on what we saw last week, correct.
Yes.
I can only go by what the committee has given me last, you know, Tuesday night. But that's all I can go by.
Kev brought up this interesting point before we get into that. Brought up the head-to-head win. How could Indiana fall below Oregon? Well, the way the committee has it right now, Miami is three spots behind Notre Dame, or two or three, and Miami beat sure. Notre Dame.
And to me, strength of record, Notre Dame 13, Miami 14.
Mm-hmm.
Strength of schedule, Notre Dame 42, Miami 44. Mm-hmm. Common opponents, they play four common opponents. NC State, Pitt, Stanford, and Syracuse. Mm-hmm. Miami had a larger margin of victory than three of them.
Yep.
The only one that Notre Dame beat more was Syracuse.
70-7, you know, whatever it was.
And Miami beat Notre Dame. How is Miami not ranked ahead of Notre Dame?
It's Notre Dame. Yep. Listen, much like we talk about the Tom Brady effect and the Patrick Mahomes effect and different things in the NFL, in college, it's Alabama and Notre Dame, Urban Meyer, Nick Saban, certain coaches, certain teams. The eye test tells you the Irish are really good.
No doubt about it. Their best win is USC.
Listen, to be honest with you, I think both of those teams should be in over Oklahoma. That's just me. Oklahoma and Ole Miss are the two teams that I'd be nervous about. Even Oregon, those three teams.
Is there any way Miami gets in with a wild card?
It's going to be the committee has to make a huge change in what they did this week because there's
which usually doesn't happen.
Well, the reality is that Alabama needs to lose. You know, BYU needs to lose, and the committee has to make a decision that they think Miami should leapfrog Notre Dame. It's the only way. The committee has to say they played each other. I'm changing my vote.
Okay, I got you.
That's it. Miami's on the outside looking in, and let's be honest. I mean, I know it's been a while, but Miami's still a blue blood in this sport. Miami's still a recognizable school. Yep. It's the U. I mean, it's something. So there's a lot of craziness here.
Okay.
Speaking of craziness, before we get into the games, Kev, let's talk Lane Kiffin for a second.
Yes.
So Lane Kiffin strings Ole Miss along for forever, gives them the best season they've ever had, jumps ship to arguably their biggest, or maybe second if you want to say Mississippi State, rival in the sport. and goes to LSU. Apparently, Ole Miss made a bid with similar money.
Yep.
But he jumped ship. This is who Lane Kiffin is. I don't know why everybody's surprised, by the way.
He's always been
not a good guy. He never was.
He's always been a snake in the grass. All the stuff, you know, during the season, oh, I've changed. I've become more humble. Bullshit, you haven't. You're still the same snake in the grass. Always looking for the next big thing.
These kids deserve better.
And Ole Miss deserved a lot better. The kids deserved a lot better. The way the whole thing went down. I mean, how the hell is he negotiating during the season with other schools, with rival schools? And then for him to come out, oh, well, you know, the players all in the locker room were just saying that, you know, I should have been coaching the team in the playoffs. Ole Miss did the right thing. You're going to go coach a rival school?
Quote from Rick Pitino, just for a second. I'm not knocking football, but there's something wrong with their calendar. Yes. I'm at St. John's, and we are potentially a one seed and can win a national championship this year. And I leave in March? What's going on here? That's Pitino, okay? Different sport, but let's and he's not saying they are once. He said, imagine I'm the one seed. We're going into the tournament, and I leave in March, which was close. It happened once with Bill Frieder with Michigan, and they made it. They won the championship with Fisher. Yep. But anyway, I just to make that point that you were talking about, Kev. Sorry.
And I think even if he said if he liked Penn State better, out of conference going to Penn State, they may have said, sure, we'll let you coach through the playoffs.
It's not even Auburn or Florida. These two teams hate each other.
Yeah.
Ole Miss and you know what they say in Louisiana? Thank God for Mississippi. You know, 49th and 50th in education, all the other stuff that we joke about, right?
Yeah.
But these two states have a humongous rivalry. This is like going from Alabama to Auburn almost, or Tennessee to Florida to an extent. This is kind of intense. He's just a bad guy.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say. It's embarrassing.
I can't imagine this taking place and it happened right in front of your eyes. But listen, this is the same sport that has, you know, we're going to start recruiting. We're going to start all this. The transfer protocol is going to open. Everything's going to start and everything isn't done.
They
do basketball. They screw
up. I agree.
The NCAA is a mess.
It is,
and it shouldn't be that hard to clean this up.
They did move the portal to January 2nd, so at least it's after the season for all but four teams.
Pretty much, but the problem is four teams. You know, they have to coach their teams. They can't. You know, it should be the end of January. It just should be.
I mean, look at just even going back to last year. Brabula left Penn State to go to Missouri right before the semifinals.
Yep. He knew it because he knew that Allen was staying. Allen
was coming back. He was staying.
And Brabula left?
Yeah.
Listen, I mean, there are other moves that have been made. South Florida brought in Hartline. He's staying at Ohio State through the tournament. UCLA gets Chesney from James Madison. He's staying. Florida gets Summerall from Tulane. He's staying. You know, so a bunch of these guys are staying. Eric Morris staying at North. So a lot of these guys doing the right thing here. But Lane wanted to, and I don't blame him for tossing him. I'm glad they threw him out. I feel bad for the kids, but I'm glad.
A lot of these other coaches you mentioned that are coaching their teams through the end of the season, the schools know that they are a stepping stone.
Yeah.
And they don't, and they appreciate the fact that their coach wants to go take it to the next level. So I don't think there's that hostility. You know, not going to a rival, like your biggest rival, like Ole Miss to LSU.
Yeah, I mean, these two schools dislike each other. It's just unfortunate. Pete Golding, I think everybody in the country is going to root for Pete Golding to get Ole Miss. I'm going to root for Ole Miss harder than I usually do.
I
feel bad for the kids, and I want to see them get somewhere. And I like Chambliss, and I like what I see a lot with these kids. Lacey's a hell of a running back. You know, I don't know if Golding has the repertoire to be great at this, but hopefully he can go on a little magical run here with these kids because they deserve better, and everybody wants to see Kiffin get it stuck to him. And now, how many people are going to be rooting hard against LSU?
Oh, big time.
So now what we found out of this, before I get to the last point, I just want to bring up one other thing for you guys. we sit here and we talk about how Texas punished themselves by scheduling Ohio State. So they're never going to do that again. Nobody's going to do that. You're going to be playing a patsy for your other three games, right? This is what they're going to do now. No one's going to play. I think it should be the other way around. I think it should be like what college basketball does. I think that every year the four big conferences take the top 12 teams or top 16, whatever it is, and maybe it's the last Saturday in September or the first Saturday in October, and you play ACC versus SEC, Big 12 versus Big 10. Next year you rotate. Next year you rotate again. And every 3 years you have to play. And you seed your teams, and they have to match up. And let's see, because right now we've all anointed the SEC as the best conference in America. We've done it 3 years in a row. First year they won it, 4 years in a row. First year they won it, the last 2 years they didn't. So we don't know if they are, because they don't have to prove it on the field. And the one game they did play against the Big Ten, they lost, right? So what we need to do is see these teams play each other and see what the reality is. You can't tell me they can't get sponsorship money that will be huge for all these schools for a huge, big challenge Saturday where everybody plays each other with all the networks airing every big game. You can't tell me people wouldn't be pumped up to see Ohio State playing at Alabama. And these games would determine how the seeding is, because everybody would have to play somebody of value.
Yeah, because especially at SEC, they only play 8 conference games. So that leaves you 4 passes you can schedule.
I think they're moving it to 9 next year. Is that the case or not?
I don't know if it's next year yet. If it is, it's finally the same as everybody else. But right now, it's 8. I mean, and without playing everybody, 2 conference losses, you schedule 4 passes, you're 10-2. Guess what? You're SEC, you're 10-2, you're in.
So if Texas scheduled the patsy instead of Ohio State and they're 10-2, okay, they beat Oklahoma, they beat Vandy, they beat A&M, and their losses were to Georgia and Florida, they would be in.
They'd be 8.
They would be in. They'd be ahead of Alabama.
And Oklahoma.
I'm just saying. So that's I think that they should try to do something like that. Maybe it's a little crazy, Gino. I think it'd be great TV. I think it would be great for the sport. I think it would be – we'd find out if the ACC is really as crappy as we think, or if everybody's just mediocre. But I think that teams would rise to the occasion. There'd be home games in big spots, and I think it would be kind of fun. I doubt it will ever happen. So now I know we've been going long here a little bit, but let's get to the games this week, right? Anything else before we get to the games, Kev?
Nope.
Okay. Huge lineup, 9 games. We're only going to pick 5, okay? We're going to start – the first game of the weekend is the Conference USA Championship. We get the Owls of Kennesaw State playing the Jacksonville State Gamecocks. One of the Gamecocks made it to big weekend. It just wasn't yours, Kev.
Nope.
Gamecocks are a 2.5-point underdog in the home stadium. So that's one in Jacksonville, Alabama. Then on Friday again, we get the Sun Belt Championship. Another game that people aren't necessarily looking to, but this is important for James Madison. You get the Troy Trojans playing James Madison. Game's in Harrisonburg, so it's a home game for James Madison on their home field. They're a 23.5-point choice. That's on Friday night.
That's a very fair spread, 23.5.
James Madison is much better. Their coach has moved on, but he is coaching these games.
That defense is really good for James Madison.
Absolutely. Mountain West Championship, Fox, 8 o'clock Friday, okay? UNLV Rebels, we talked about this, going to Boise State to play the Broncos. Spreads 4.5-point favorite for Boise, last I looked, on the blue field. So that one, UNLV has a slight chance of getting in.
They're at 1%.
To fall right.
They're at like 1% right now.
Yeah, they need a lot of things to fall right. And in the first big one of the weekend, okay, guys, it's the American Conference, 8 o'clock ABC. We get North Texas Mean Green versus the Tulane Green Wave. Games in New Orleans, guys. The spread is 2.5, but the home team doesn't have it. The Mean Green are the favorite, even though they're technically the road team, but perhaps the higher seed, just even though they tied or whatever it is. Gee, who do you like in this one? Who do you think gets out of the – who's going to the playoff?
I think it's North Texas. The question is, how many stops is North Texas going to get in this game? The Mean Green are going to score. They're averaging almost 33 points a game. Can they slow down the defense? Can they slow down the run defense of Tulane is the question. They're playing on the road, so, obviously it's going to be a difficult game for them. I think North Texas might be better right now. I think it's close, but give me North Texas minus the 2.5.
Kevin?
Yeah, North Texas averaging 511 yards per game, 47 points per game. The over-under in this game is 66.
Yeah.
This would be
it's not for the faint of heart.
Tulane's got a really good quarterback, dual threat, Retzliff. He leads the team in both passing and rushing.
He was the chancellor from BYU right before the season.
Yep. But UNT, Drew Meistermaker. 3,800 yards, 29 touchdowns, only 4 interceptions.
Mr. Maker did not start in high school.
Yeah.
Did not start in high school as a senior.
North Texas has too much offense. I'm taking North Texas.
All right, I'm gonna be different than you. I think Summerall's a hell of a coach. I think Getzlaff's a hell of a quarterback. I'm gonna take a close game. I think this game's gonna be 47-44. I'm gonna take Tulane to win it. Tulane wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for the miracle win against Army, by the way. Yeah. Remember that game that Tulane's bailed that one out. I think Tulane finds a way in this one. I think they come out on top by a field goal. We go Saturday now, boys. Okay. We're gonna kick it off. We're gonna kick it off with the Mac. Okay. It's Ford Field, Detroit, ESPN noon. We got the 7-5 Miami of Ohio Redhawks taking on the 8-4 Western Michigan Bronx. Bronx are a 2.5-point favorite in that one. We're not picking it. Nope. We don't care. Nobody's going anywhere. But we are going to pick the Big 12, which is the other noon game. This one's high noon, AT&T Stadium, Arlington, Texas. BYU 11-1, Texas Tech 11-1. They played a couple weeks back. Texas Tech dominated them at home. This matchup's in Texas, but it's not a home game. Tech is favored by 12.5. Last I saw it, we started at 11, went up to 12.5. Kev, why don't we start with you on this one? Who do you like?
Yeah, everything points to Texas Tech in this game. I mean, the way they dominated BYU the first time they met, I think BYU finds a way to turn this around. I don't see this being a blowout. I think this comes down to the end. I'm going to take BYU plus a 12.5.
Not that you like Bear or anything.
No.
Anyway.
I've been on him all year.
Gino, who do you got?
BYU's offense had no answers the last time they played. They only totaled 255 yards. They averaged less than 5 yards a pass. The Red Raiders have a big personnel advantage in this game. I'm sorry. Along the lines of scrimmage, they can manufacture points up front. I don't think this changes. Give me Texas Tech minus the points. I don't know, 31-17, it's like a 14-point game, so I'm taking them minus the 12.5. Darren?
I'm going to break the tie on Geno's side on this one. I think Texas Tech finds a way to pull away in this one. I think they win it by 20-plus, and it's not that I think BYU's bad. I just think that Texas Tech is really good, and they're a team I really think can go far in this tournament this year. I think Texas Tech wins this game. I'm going to say it's going to be 34-14, somewhere like that, but I think BYU's had a hell of a year, but it won't be enough to get them into the playoff. We go to the SEC, okay? Main course at 4 o'clock, all right? Right there. It's Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta where every SEC game goes. ABC is your place to watch it. 11-1 Georgia takes on 10-2 Alabama. Georgia, 2.5-point favorite in this one. Alabama seemed to have had Georgia's number the last few times they've played. Gino, we'll start with you. Who do you got in this one?
All right. This is not the same Alabama team that won at Georgia early in the year. The Bulldogs has significantly improved defensively. I think Georgia's playing like the second or third best team in the country. Georgia makes Alabama one-dimensional offensively by taking away the run. Gunnar Stockton continues to roll. Give me Georgia minus the 2.5. Kev?
Yeah, you know, Alabama's been playing well. I mean, they came out of the Georgia game and they also beat ranked – at the time, Vandy, Missouri, and Tennessee, which we thought was impressive at the time, was 4 straight games against ranked teams. They won easily, most of those. But I think Georgia makes up for the loss that they had earlier this year. I think Georgia wins this game by a touchdown.
I think Alabama is playing to be in the playoff. If they don't win this game, they're not in. I think they win this game. I think Alabama finds a way 30-24. I think it's a really good game. I think we're all looking forward to this one Saturday at 4 o'clock. I'm going to take Bama to find a way to get into the playoff. 2 years in a row not making the playoff, and Kellen DeBoer might be the guy that goes to Penn State because they may not keep him. Next, we go to the ACC, the game of mayhem, okay? We get the 7-5 Duke Blue Devils, like easy for me to say, versus the 10-2 Virginia Cavaliers, Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte. Games on ABC, Kev. Cavs are a 3.5-point favorite. Thought it'd be a little higher than it is. We'll start with you on this one, Kev. Where are we going?
Yeah, another high over under 57.5. So it should be another high scoring game here. You know, Darien Mensah, the quarterback, gives Duke a real chance. 3,500 yards, 28 touchdowns, only 4 picks. But I think Virginia's a better team, obviously. I think Duke is very fortunate to be here. I think Virginia's talent wins out. I think Virginia wins this one by 10 points.
Gee, where you going, pal?
Well, if you're rooting for playoff chaos, this is it. Because if Duke somehow wins this game and gets left out of the tournament, being the ACC champ, boy, we're going to have cries throughout ACC land all over the place. I think this is a rematch of the 17-point win earlier this year. I think Virginia is clearly the better team. I'll take Virginia minus 3.5. Darren?
I hate to have us have a sweep, but I'm going to give us a sweep. I think Virginia's just a little bit better. I think this game's close for a while, probably for 3 quarters. I think Virginia pulls away late, kind of where Kev is. I think this one's going to finish, I don't know, 37-24, something like that. I think Virginia scores late and just salts it away. I think the Cavaliers advance. One last game, guys. It's number one versus number two. It's a game that's not big enough for game day to go to because they're an SEC shill. They can't go down to one versus two. They can't do
ESEC, ESPN.
Oh, God. So the fact that they're not there for the one versus two matchup at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, 8 p.m. on Fox, and I know it's not an ESPN ABC game. That's probably why they're not there. You get 12-0 Indiana versus 12-0 Ohio State. Buckeyes are a 4-point favorite. Started 3.5, went up to 4.5, back down to 4 last I saw. Gino, who are you thinking in this one? Who do you like in the battle of the undefeateds?
I think this is a good game. I'm just going straight and easy. I think it belongs to the program that's used to the big stage. I'm taking the champs to win this game. Give me Ohio State minus the 4.
Kev?
Defense, defense, defense. Ohio State's number one in both yards per game and points per game allowed. Indiana's number two in points, number four in yards. So, you know, it's got to be which offense can make a play. I think Indiana's offense, when Mendoza's been a little bit better than Ohio State, I think Indiana finds a way. I'll take Indiana with the bonus of plus 4 points. I think Indiana wins this by a field goal.
Okay. I'm going to break the tie on Kev's side. I'm going to take Indiana in this one. I like the way they're playing. I think Cignetti's he's kind of a prickish kind of coach. I kind of enjoy the way he kind of does it. He's a no bull guy, and he's turned this program around in 1 year. And in year two, Indiana's a mainstay. Indiana hadn't been a mainstay ever. I think Indiana wins this game. I'm going to say it's low scoring, though. I don't think Indiana's going to put up 30 on them. I think it's going to be closer in the 20s. I think it's going to be a 24-20 game. I think Indiana finds a way. Mendoza gets him down the field late and wins this one. I'm going to take the senior quarterback over the freshman quarterback. That's what I'm looking at. And that's college football. A couple of hidden gems for you, Kev.
Yep. Just a couple this week. Number one in the NFL, New England. We know it's 110 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
They've scored at least 23 in every game. They have not given up any more than 23 in any game. They are the first team in NFL history to do that.
Very cool.
Okay.
The second one, you know, believe it or not, the golf season just ended a couple weeks ago with the RSM Championship. It did not end with the FedEx Cup. It did not end with the Ryder Cup. They still kept playing tournaments. But now that the season is officially over, Scottie Scheffler led in first-round scoring average. He led in second-round scoring average and in third-round scoring average and in fourth-round scoring average. The last 40 years, it only happened one more time. Can you guess the player in the year?
Tiger? It has to be.
Jagger? No. Nope. In his magical 2000 year.
It had to be Tiger, right?
Right.
That's amazing. He just doesn't have the personality of Tiger, so it doesn't stand out as much.
Right. I found this on Wayne Gretzky. I know this is stealing a little bit of your, you know, more of the buried treasure type.
That's fine.
We know that some of the stats we've seen, of course, the fastest player ever to 1,000 points. If you take the amount of time it took to go from 1,001 to 2,000, it would be the second fastest anybody ever got 1,000 points.
Wow. God.
In the 1980s decade, He had more 5-point games with 83 than 0-point games, 76. He's the only man to score 200 points in the season. He did it 4 times.
Oh.
And those are Mike Gretzky. Hey, I got one quick trivia question for you guys.
Yep. Yeah.
College football. 5 schools in the FBS do not have university in their name.
Do not have university.
Notre Dame.
Boston College.
Boston College is one.
Okay. So it's teams that they're in the FBS.
Yep.
So let me think here.
I'll give you one hint.
Okay.
When you're ready.
Okay, I'm ready. Give me one hint.
3 of them go together.
3 of them go together. So they're in the same conference, that means?
Not same conference. 2 different conferences, but they go together.
Oh, so it's the academy schools, all 3 academies. So Air Force, Army, and Navy.
Yep.
Boston College.
And the other one is a conference member of with BC.
Conference by the Boston College, Syracuse University, Miami, Florida State. You know what? Give it to me. I don't want to.
The Ramblin' Wreck of Georgia Tech.
Oh, that's right. Georgia Technical College. Yeah, well, yep. Yeah, no, it's a Georgia Technical College. You're right. Yeah. I wouldn't have got it though. Even if I went through, I said Georgia Tech in my head, and it didn't even occur to me. It's a great question,
Darren.
Well, I mean,
anything else we want?
Well, we're going to touch a little bit on the Devin Williams thing, right, guys? I guess
we're going to see
some Devin Williams. If Devin Williams is your answer for the 9th inning, it's not a good signing. If he's your answer for the 8th inning, it might work out. This is what Met fans have been attacking me on this for some strange reason that I work with. You know, they're like, oh, he's great, great second half. No. He had a great June when they took him out of any pressure situations, and he had a strong September. He was not good in July. He was not good in August. He was not good in April, and he was not good in May. But is he an upgrade over Helsley and what he gave you? Probably. I hope he does well for you. I just don't know if he has the stones to pitch in a big spot, Kev. That's my take on Devin Williams.
He's fine as long as you bring back Diaz.
If you don't have a 9th-inning guy,
he's not the answer.
I don't know if he's your answer.
He was fine in Milwaukee with the Yankees. No, that brings into question if he can handle New York pressure.
Well, it also brings the question, he gave up the homer to Alonso. I mean, it's not like he was great in the big spot in Milwaukee either.
Yep.
He had a great season, put up great numbers. But is he a guy that's going to be able to produce big numbers on a regular basis in big spots? That's what it comes to.
He's fine with Diaz and with what you hope is a healthy Minter and Raley and one other big arm back there.
This is your backup plan if the Diaz negotiation does not go the way you think.
Yeah.
Okay. Stearns likes him. Stearns had him before in Milwaukee. This is your backup plan.
Listen, this is what it comes down to
right now.
He's got great stuff. Let's see what happens.
And you don't have Helsley because he signed with Baltimore for 2 years for 28. You gave Devin 3 years, 51. Yeah. And basically, this is your backup plan if you don't get Diaz.
Yeah.
Only other big signing we had last couple of weeks, Dylan Cease signed with Toronto, 7 years, $210 million, 30 per. Darren?
Yeah, some of that's deferred, so it comes out to like $26 million. But the thing about Cease, and Cease has great stuff, and he has some really huge starts every now and again. He has the inning of implosion.
Yep.
His ERA against the American League East teams, team by team, all of them are over 5. He has not pitched well in this division. But the Blue Jays don't get a lot of guys that are willing to go up there. They had to make the move. And they overpaid Cease to do it. And it's a lot, but the guy's got the stuff.
Yeah.
It's just that he would go 4 good innings, that 5th inning he'd implode. And he would just that's that kind of pitcher, Kev.
A great 2022.
Yep.
A good 2024.
Yep.
And the rest of his career has been mediocre. I don't care what the stuff is. The results have been mediocre at best. And, you know, workhorse, he started 32 games a year. Great. He never throws more than 160, 170 innings. He's a 5-inning guy.
They don't want him to throw more than 160 innings. That's the thing I think you always miss with this.
Because he's throwing 110 pitches in 5 innings.
They're not looking for him to go 7, Kev.
Well, $30 million a year, he better be going.
No, he's not. And I'm going to tell you something.
That's
you
know an overpay what? Then.
It is an overpay. But you know what? The team, to get a big-time starter to come there, and he's got to be in the top, 25? You got to overpay for him to come there. You overpaid. They just made a run. They were
one game away from winning the World Series. They needed someone to put them over.
Yeah.
One game away. Listen, I liked having Cease on the pods. I rooted for him, but he just never seemed, like you said, Kev, he really had trouble getting out of the fifth or out of the sixth inning. That was his big issue. The Blue Jays are going to work around it, but it's a big signing for them.
Very frustrating pitcher to root for.
I think your biggest point, though, Darren, is that it's an overpay because they needed to get somebody, and he's one of the ones that was willing to go there. Yep. To be honest, I think that's it. So,
absolutely.
All right, week 14, boys.
Yeah. Darren, first, I got a couple of buried treasures for you guys, and then we'll let you go. All right. It's kind of a silly one, but I'm going to start with it's a baseball one. I got a couple of baseball ones for you. There's only one player ever to hit 50 homers and 50 doubles in the same season. Not in the Hall of Fame.
Albert Bell.
You got it. Right? Still not in the Hall of Fame. Albert Bell was the most feared hitter I had ever seen. I find that shocking that he wasn't there, but I guess, you know, too many rumors.
The media hates him. That's why.
Yeah, I know. And he ran over Fernando Vina and the whole thing. He was a great player. Only 10 players hit 380 or above in an 162 game span since 1940. Okay. The first one's Williams, 409, Gwynn, 402, Wade Boggs, 401. They're the only three over 400. Any idea who the other seven guys would be?
One more time there.
They all hit over any 162 straight game span, any 162 games, these players hit 380 or above since 1940.
George Brett
didn't do it. He never played. He didn't play that many games in that season.
Tony Gwynn
was 402. He did it. Ted Williams, 409. He did it. Wade Boggs, 401. He did it. The other guys, Rod Carew, 399.
Yep.
396 for Todd Helton. Wade Boggs, 401. Yep. Larry Walker, 392. Hank Aaron, 381.
Wow.
Stan Musial, 383. Ichiro, 387. And the guy that surprised me most on the list, Nomar Garcia-Para, 389.
Wow.
I did not realize that. And just while we're on baseball, did you realize that Joe DiMaggio was a third ballot Hall of Famer? Anyway. Tennis, just because it's fun. Roger Federer played 1,526 singles matches, okay? He won 80% of them. 20 grand slams, 103 titles. Do you know what percentage of points he won in his career? Actual points.
85?
54.
54, wow.
He only won 54% of the points he played. But he's one of the greatest of all time. That blew me away.
Wow.
Do they not count aces in that?
They count everything. Every point he's ever played.
Wow.
You know, he wins a lot, 40, 30. 54. 50, yeah, okay. It's 4%. It's a number that blew you away. A little quick football one. We have a ton of great running backs over the years, you know, through the league, right? Only one led the league in yards from scrimmage for four straight seasons. Do you know who that was?
Roger Craig?
No.
Marshall Faulk?
No. Thurman Thomas?
Ooh.
Four straight years led the league in yards from scrimmage. The last one is kind of a little bit of a crazy one. I have one other. I'm going to save it for next week. So, college football, National Signing Day, big day. 2008, offensive lineman Kevin Hart from Fernley High School in Nevada. He's gone to TV. He's got the Cal hat. He's got the Oregon hat. He picks Cal, okay? The auditorium's packed. You know, everybody's going crazy. There was a problem. He was not recruited by either school. He made the whole thing up. When Coach Jeff Tedford saw it on the news, he said he never recruited the kid and never heard of the kid. Imagine he called a press conference. The whole school showed up. He picked the hat over another hat, and wow, he was never recruited by either school. That I didn't know in 2008. Those are my buried treasures. Gino, let's go to week 14 of the NFL.
All right. Kev, you were 3-0 last week. You have honors.
Wow.
You're at 19-20, so let's get over the hump here.
That made up for my college picks last week.
I haven't been good in either, so don't worry about it.
I got to start with one of the big games here. I'm going to take the Jaguars at home are getting the point and a half.
Correct.
They are.
And with Jones hobbled with the injuries there, I think the Jaguars pull win this one. I mean, I don't see how they're a home dog. I'll take the Jaguars.
I'm with you on that, Darren.
Okay. You know, the Packer-Bears spread at 6.5 seems like there's something wrong. So I'm going to take the Packers, assuming that they know something. I'm going to say the Packers win this game by a touchdown. There's no real reason to it. It's just the fact that that spread shouldn't be 6.5. I don't know why it's 6.5. I feel like they're toying with me at something, and I have to bet it. I don't know why. I'm going to take the Pack.
All right, my first pick is Seattle minus the 6.5 against the Falcons. I think the Falcons are dead. I think they're done. Kirk Cousins looks horrible back there. Give me Seattle minus the 6.5. Kev?
It was a rivalry game, but I think the Raiders are just so bad. Denver's 7.5 on the road. I'm going to take Denver, laying the 7.5.
It's going to sound stupid. I'm taking the Jets getting 2.5 at home. I think they're going to win this game. I have no idea why. I just think they're going to win this game. I think the Jets win this game by a field goal.
A winning streak?
Yeah, two in a row. I think the Jets find a way.
I think Sean McVay is pissed after last week's loss. I'm taking the Rams by the 7.5. I agree with you, too,
by the way, on that one. But,
on the road against the Cardinals. I think he's pissed. I think they beat the Cardinals by like 25 this week. I think it's a blowout. Kev?
Oh, I'm tempted to go head-to-head with Darren with the Bears. You know, I'm going to go different way. I'm going to take the Bengals. I think they know that they're playing for their – they have a belief that they're only two games back, and they believe in Joe Burrow. They're getting 5.5 up in Buffalo. I'm going to take the Bengals getting 5.5.
Darren?
You know, back you guys took a couple I like. I like the Rams. I like the Broncos. I'm going to take the Commanders getting 2.5 on the road. I think if Daniels is back and McLaurin's back, and I don't know what Minnesota's got.
That's horrible.
I know, but I don't know what Minnesota's got. I'm going to take the Commanders getting the points. I think that they might have a Burrow effect for Washington, who almost beat Denver last week. I think that the Daniels effect will have the same effect that the Burrow effect had for Cincinnati. I think Washington finds a way to win this game.
Okay, my third final pick. Kev, I'm going head-to-head. I think this is Buffalo in a blowout. I think this ends the whole Joe Burrow miracle year. Buffalo needs the win. They can't afford to screw around right now. I think Buffalo gets the win. I'm taking Buffalo minus the 5.5. Those are the picks for week 14 NFL. By the way, Giants on the bye. We talked about the Jets. They're home for the Dolphins. Darren?
Anything else before I wrap it up, guys? We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin here with Gino talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. Wacky world where I want to make a little bit of a dedication tonight. My mother-in-law, who passed away two nights ago, has listened to this show inadvertently because she's right next door to me and hears me screaming all the time. So she's probably heard every episode, and I'm sure she's listening now. So Mom, I love you, and, you know, thanks for being you. You know, please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. You know, we post a lot on social. Please like it. If you don't like it, pretend you like it. Fake it. Like it. Pretend you're this kid that made his own draft party at his own high school that was never recruited for anybody. But again, you know, for us, we love doing this. Please communicate with us. Please let us know what you want. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.